Chapter 22. Starting Chartered Schools. Electric Expectations. That evening, the Winona School Board voted 5-2 to authorize Bluffview as a chartered school. It was the first school board in the nation to approve a charter. Fall 1991. By September 1991, the Minnesota Department of Education reported interest from some 40 groups around the state that wanted to learn more about submitting charter applications. Earlier in June 1991, Joe Nathan and others had organized two meetings at the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota to review resources available to chartering proponents interested in using the new law. Passing a law is one thing, interpreting it and implementing it is another. I always believed the hardest part was in the latter, in starting the schools. In the June 25, 1991, Minnesota Journal, Kurt Johnson, then head of the Citizens League, described the first of these meetings. In mid-June, about 40 people gathered in late afternoon in a room at the Humphrey Institute. They were frustrated but dedicated teachers, a principal ready to leave the safety of the system for the uncertainties of helping to birth a chartered school. A superintendent who said his board is ready to help teachers who want to form these schools, an attorney who spread early confidence that technical barriers are not insurmountable, a marketing expert who encouraged the group to think like entrepreneurs, and the director of a major program with resources to apply to new ventures. A room full of people who want to start schools and people who want to help them. There was the subtle current of electric expectations, the fears and uncertainties stirring around in a mixture of visions and promise. It is the stuff of which movements are made. The group raised numerous questions that needed answers. Questions such as, could teachers presently teaching approach a school board other than the one where they are employed? How will the Minnesota Department of Education rank order the 8 schools that may be established, by date of approval or date they open for students? What startup funding might be available for the planning process? What if school boards resisted en masse? Representative Becky Kelso reminded the group that the chartering provision passed by an absolute hair. According to Ted Coldery's notes, Kelso told the group, "Nothing else could have passed. If school boards obstruct its implementation, they will be building the case for the legislature taking them out of it. But I have real hopes the boards will respond well." Everyone present in these meetings knew they had to establish good, quality chartered schools. They were all aware that the future success of chartering depended on creating quality. Nathan, who founded the Center for School Change at the Humphrey Institute that year, stepped forward to help. He explained in his 2011 interview, "We used a lot of the research and a lot of the experience of the alternative schools to say, here are the things you need to think through. There was a lot of experience with the alternative schools of the 60s and 70s, some of them successful, some of them not successful. The Center for School Change was able to get some money from the Minneapolis and St. Paul Foundations and from TCF, then Twin City Federal. We were able to hire a person whose full-time job was to try to help people start new kinds of charters. We helped people set up a series of rural options, some of them schools within schools, some of them charters." Most of us who'd supported chartering thought that North Branch Superintendent James Walker, an attendee of the Humphrey Institute meeting who had publicly advocated for the legislation, would lead the movement by establishing one of the first chartered schools in his district. To my disappointment, he informed me by letter on August 13, 1991, that their proposal would be delayed. He explained the delay with these words, "It is the intent to keep our provisional request for a charter school in place, but it is clear that there are too many questions that need clarification prior to implementation. The teachers and I have agreed to try to work through these issues during the 1991-1992 school year so we can charter in 1992-93. The chartering legislation had become law in June 1991, but it would take until November and December for the first two chartered school applications to be presented to the local and state boards. Frankly, the schools were not what chartering supporters expected. We anticipated that teachers and parents would spawn, design, and run new schools, but the first two applications came from existing schools. One was from a private Montessori school requesting charter status, and the other was from a small rural school that would otherwise be closed due to declining enrollment. Transforming private schools into public schools and saving small rural schools wasn't exactly what we had in mind when we passed chartering legislation. Kelso responded to this point in a November 18, 1991 article by Mary Jane Spetanka in the Star Tribune. "Certainly, schools that already have a base are going to be the first applicants. I would be very alarmed if we had charter school proposals put together hastily. Starting a charter school is a whole lot of work." Kelso expanded on these remarks in an article by the same reporter in the winter 1992 edition of Agenda. "My intent was that the law would be very broad. It would not exclude any of these kinds of options. I don't want to say that I'm disappointed in these kinds of charter schools. What we would hope to see in time is groups of people who have new ideas in education, who start from ground zero to build a new school. But I accept that that will take a good deal of time." The first school to be granted a charter was Bluffview Montessori School in Winona, a city in the southeastern tip of Minnesota. At that time, Bluffview was a preschool to grade 6 private school with 70 students. On November 18, 1991, Bluffview director Michael Dorr presented to the Winona School Board a proposal for becoming a kindergarten to grade 6 chartered school. He argued that the Montessori option should not be limited to the wealthy. He presented a petition that included nearly 1,200 signatures from people in Winona who supported Bluffview's move to become a chartered school. I joined Dorr and several Montessori parents at the hearing. As described in the Winona Daily News, we defended the proposal for 1.5 hours before a packed Jefferson Elementary School auditorium audience. Dorr stated his clear understanding that as a chartered school, they must accept all applicants for whom they had room. He also confirmed the school would move from its present quarters in a Catholic church to affirm its non-sectarian nature. That evening, the Winona School Board voted 5-2 to authorize Bluffview as a chartered school. It was the first school board in the nation to approve a charter. What was even more stunning is that the board approved the school over the objection of Superintendent Ronald McIntyre. He told the board that Winona Schools, which had about 4,900 students, would lose approximately $90,000 in state funds if the Montessori school met its enrollment projections for 34 new students. McIntyre also questioned the premise of the chartering law. "If the legislature wants to fix the system, why not give all schools in Minnesota the chance to function without the 1,600 mandates that are on the books?" he asked. Not an unreasonable question, in my view. Stuart Miller, who had a child in the Bluffview preschool and was chairman of the Winona School Board, supported the charter plan. As reported in Star Tribune articles from November 18 and 19, 1991, he said, "I think the benefits outweigh the risks. The whole point should be what's best for children, not what's best for the school district or the Montessori school." He also said the argument that the district would lose money was specious. "If we lose students to the charter school, we don't have to expend the revenues to serve those students. I think we gain a new way of delivering the public school to people, and we give them choice. For me, it was a watershed moment. It was pure joy to personally observe the first approval of a chartered school in the nation. Dora and the Bluffview teachers were ecstatic. The energy of the teaching team, their vision for the future, and their deep commitment to the students they served moved me. The support from the community also moved me. At long last, I had seen evidence that the compromise chartering legislation might still impact children's lives. November 18, 1991 was one of the most meaningful days of my 18 years in the Minnesota Senate. The proposal moved quickly to the Minnesota Board of Education, where Bluffview Montessori Charter School was approved on December 10, 1991. In a letter to Miller confirming the approval, Thomas Lindquist, president of the Board of Education, wrote, "This was an historic moment for both Winona and the State Board, because Bluffview is the first charter request to be presented and approved." On January 7, 1992, on the heels of this approval, U.S. Senator David Durenberger traveled to Bluffview to hear firsthand the realities of starting a new chartered school, including the need for startup funding. He told reporters he was expecting his chartering legislation to be considered as the first item on the Senate's agenda when Congress reconvened January 21st, and that he was working with Senator Ted Kennedy to make sure chartered schools like Bluffview would qualify for the proposed grants built into his legislation. Ironically, the Bluffview approval also threw fuel on the political fire about chartering and vouchers. According to reporter Lynn Olson in the January 15, 1992 issue of Education Week, chartering opponents portrayed Bluffview as a modified voucher plan and proof that the legislation would open the door to further privatization of education. Around this same time, in early January 1992, a second chartered school proposal was pending before the Minnesota Board of Education. This application came from Toivola Meadowlands, a K-12 school serving several communities in northeastern Minnesota. As described in Chapter 10, this tiny rural school was the main concern of Senator Ron Dicklich, chair of the Senate Education Funding Division. The Meadowlands school was scheduled to be closed at the end of the 1991-1992 school year due to declining enrollment. Dicklich never wavered in his support for the chartering legislation because he wanted to find a way to keep this particular school open. Making Toivola Meadowlands a chartered school was the only way the school could survive. The Toivola Meadowlands proposal was for a multi-age, multi-activity classroom, an open school that would focus on environmental and agricultural themes. At that time, the school had 165 students in northeastern Minnesota. Dick Raich, a parent working with others on behalf of the school, reported that 17 committees of teachers, parents, students, and community members were designing a new, much more progressive entrepreneurial curriculum for the school, which would include foreign language for elementary students, a strengthened outcome-based reading program, and integration of classes in different subjects, all built on students' interests. Once the local school board had granted the charter, the next step was to receive approval from the Minnesota State Board of Education. But that was anything but routine. The 9 members of the state board were divided. Some resisted because the application was put forth only to keep a district school alive that would otherwise be closed. 4 members were in favor and 5 opposed, including the chairman. Enter Dicklich, the consummate Iron Range dealmaker. He met with the state board chair, telling him he was there to lobby for Toivola Meadowlands. After the chairman expressed his concerns with the school's application, Dicklich asked him, "Don't you have that request in at the legislature for $300,000? The chairman said, "Yes, it was funding for a really important state board project." replied Dicklich. This is really important to me. We'll see how important that is. As Dicklich concluded the story, the chairman changed his mind and would vote for the charter school, so that's how they got their school. The school opened on September 7, 1993, for 190 students in grades K-12. In her 2011 interview, Minnesota Federation of Teachers President Sandra Peterson recalled her concern about Tuivola Meadowlands and the example it set. As time went on, we saw charter schools sometimes used for the wrong purposes. That's when I get dismayed, because that isn't the purpose. The charters were also to be models of good curriculum and something different. It wasn't to avoid consolidation. I think that's a real issue. Local school boards and the State Board of Education had now approved 2 of the 8 schools allowed by the new chartering law. But the road was getting very bumpy for others.